At the end of July, protesters from Greenpeace rappelled from the St. John's Bridge in Oregon to stop Shell from sending the ship Fenica to the Arctic to drill for oil. One of my friends from seminary was with them. When they did it, they knew that they would be out there swaying from a bivouac setup, that they might be out there for days, that they might be arrested, and they did it anyway. Please know that I'm not screwing up my grammar. They and them are my friends' preferred personal pronouns, and while they are not here, I am still honoring that. For my friend, this is living out their Unitarian Universalist faith. This isn't the first time they've done this, either. They were out on the front lines in Ferguson. They partnered with other organizations to help in other flare-ups of social justice and in interfaith work. They have been arrested for living out their faith. So while I stood there that Thursday morning reading their tweets and Facebook posts from the scene and watching the videos they'd recorded earlier, I had a lot of mixed emotions. I was so proud that I know this person. I was so proud that they attend Meadville Lombard. I was scared for them. This isn't standing out on the side of the road with a picket sign. This is something that could potentially end with them injured or in jail or both. And then these strange emotions came up. I felt a weird mix of jealousy and inadequacy. I wanted to live out my faith like that. And at the same time, I knew I could not. Not like that. And I worried that it made me less than. That I wasn't living out the social justice mandate that is so prevalent in our faith, that is so prevalent in my seminary. Every month, there are new calls to action, new opportunities for students to go provide witness, to go and fight, to go and be the people we are called to be. And every month, I look at them, and for a brief moment, I consider it. And then that strange set of emotions come back up. It's not just from my seminary either. One only has to turn on the news to see the calls to action for Unitarian Universalists. Ferguson, Charleston, Black Lives Matter, Kentucky, transgender rights, Syria, Colorado, Planned Parenthood, gun violence. It's enough to break your heart, and I know it does mine. I want to help, and I'm sure you do too. After all, it's what we as a people, as a religious movement, are called to do. I've only recently begun having the strength and the courage to post on my Facebook wall about these things. And even that makes me shake when I do it. So what does that make me if I can't? If I can't go? You might be wondering why I can't go do these things. After all, I'm somewhat young, depending on your perspective. I can give you a multitude of reasons, and many of them can be easily shot down by seeing the other activists out there. I have a family. I have a medical condition. And we don't have the spare money in the budget to allow me to travel to these events. But I have friends with younger and more children than me who have been a part of some real hardcore social justice work. I have friends with disabilities and medical conditions worse than mine who are able to be present. I have friends who crowdsource their trips to be able to go. So I feel like these reasons are simply excuses. So I decided to think about the why behind my choice to not participate. Behind my emotions that get stirred up every time another march is brought up. And it comes down to one thing, imposter syndrome. This is that feeling that you don't think you can belong, and at some point, someone in charge will figure out that you totally shouldn't be there. In seminary, the thought process goes like this. I think I could be a minister. Oh, cool, they think I could be a minister too. Oh, wait, that person over there is way more ministerial than I am, and there's no way I can do that. Oh, no, any minute now, they're going to figure out that I cannot be a minister, should not be a minister, am faking my way through this entire thing, and I am going to get booted out on my ear. It's tough, and it's real, and it's not just with seminary students. It happens with everyone. We don't feel we measure up to the people next to us at work, or in the volunteer group, or the other parents, or couples, or whatever. It's a natural human phenomenon to compare ourselves with each other. A saying that I repeat a lot to myself, especially during seminary, is don't compare your insides to someone else's outsides. We don't know what's going on inside another person. You might be surprised to learn that even people we consider to have it all together suffer from imposter syndrome. Actress Michelle Pfeiffer says, "I still think people will find out that I am really not very talented. I am really not very good, and it's all been a big sham." Dr. Chan, the chief of the World Health Organization, has been quoted as saying, "There are an awful lot of people out there who think I'm an expert. How do these people believe all this about me? I am so much aware of all the things I don't know." Even Maya Angelou said, "I have written 11 books, but each time I think, oh, they're going to find out now. I've run a game on everybody, and they're going to find me out." So if all these people suffer with imposter syndrome, I realize that it must be pretty normal. The American Psychological Association, in an article they did on imposter syndrome, states that a way to fight through it is to recognize your own expertise and remember what you do well. It was at this point that it hit me. We don't all have to be Gryffindor. So what does that mean? Well, if you've read the Harry Potter series or have watched the movies or have heard anything ever about Harry Potter, then you may know that there are four houses or groupings at the Hogwarts School for Wizards. And if you know nothing about Harry Potter, that's okay, because we're going to go over it a bit here. Each year, the new students are sorted into these houses based on their dominant personality traits and where they would best be suited. No house is necessarily greater or weaker than the others, as they all have their own strengths and weaknesses. In fact, some students could fall into multiple houses. So at the start of each year, the new students would be ushered forward and the sorting hat placed on their heads, and it would determine the best fit for that student. So let's review the houses. Ravenclaw are the really smart ones. They're the good students, spending all their time studying and preparing for class. Hufflepuff are the caregivers. They're the ones who look out for their fellow students, usually in the background, rarely seen. Slytherin. Okay, they're painted in a bad light in the books and in the movies, but since this is the group that all the rich kids get sorted into, we're just going to say that they're the ones who are really good with money. I need you to work with me on this one for today. And then there's Gryffindor, the fighters, the defenders, the brave ones, the heroes. So it's easy to see why everyone loves to be in Gryffindor. Why wouldn't you? Sure, there's that potential for injury or death, but they're heroes. I contend, though, that one of the reasons that Gryffindor members are so heroic and successful is because of the support team around them. And I contend it's the same for all social justice activists. So let's look at the other houses who never get the attention they deserve and see how they would fit in with our very real social justice work. Ravenclaw, the intelligent ones. These are your logistics people, the ones who love to figure out exactly how a group is going to get from to and from the location, how they're going to stay together, what the itinerary is, what permits might be needed, where the bathrooms are, and how it all fits together. And depending on your social justice work, this is also the group who has figured out who to call to bail a group out of jail and will have those calls made before booking is finished. A long time ago, I discovered this was my wheelhouse. I was once a young youth pastor's wife with a thriving youth group. And we talked, just talked, about possibly taking the kids from here in Florida to Washington, D.C. for a conference. In 3 days, I had a proposal book together of various methods of travel, including full breakdown of costs, with gas if we chose to drive, various hotel options, and a meal plan option. I also knew when we would need to leave Florida to arrive on time, what sites we could see while we were up there, and the associated costs, and had a full breakdown of the itinerary for a trip we weren't even sure we were taking. This also, by the way, was in the 90s, before the internet was a really easy thing to get to. But this was how I helped, and on some level it still is. I travel every few months to Chicago for classes at Meadville Lombard, and when I do, I always have everything planned in advance. Airline travel, trains and buses to get me to my housing information, grocery lists for there, packing lists for here, etc., etc. And when deciding on any activity anywhere, home or school, while I may not admit it to anyone, I have already planned when we need to leave, how best to get there, what should be taken with us, what we will do once we get there. You get the idea. It's why there was no worry about me getting here on time this morning. I had looked at Google Maps yesterday and planned it all out. But this is my strength. It's what I do naturally. And for me, this is how I need to support the movement. So let's move on to Hufflepuff, the caregivers. This is your hospitality group. This is the group that makes sure the volunteers are fed, watered, and kept warm or cool, depending on where you are. They're the ones who will work with the logistics people to make sure that those who need to can get to showers and soft beds. When an event involves home hospitality or bunking down at the church, they're your go-to people. They make sure there's enough food, make sure there's enough water for everyone, and they make sure there are blankets and coats in the winter and sunscreen and shade in the summer. They are so very much needed. Sometimes the people on the front lines get wrapped up in what they're doing and they forget to eat, and that's dangerous. So this is the group that doesn't ask if anybody's hungry. They just start passing out sandwiches. A few years ago, a friend at church wanted his humanist group to partner with the Presbyterian Church and their ministry on immigration issues. The Presbyterian Church had lawyers who were helping immigrants with paperwork and legal documents once a month in the evening. My friend knew his group couldn't provide that level of support, so he did what came naturally to him. He offered to organize food for during the event. He got people to donate food, potluck style, and then he delivered it to the church, hot and ready to serve. He made sure that the families who were there got dinner while they waited and that the volunteers got a chance to eat too. So the next time you have someone asking, "Do you need anything for this? For about your social justice event?" Take them up on it. They're your Hufflepuffs. They want to help. They want to provide. Let them. Okay, Slytherin. These are your money people. And money, while sometimes called a necessary evil, is just that, necessary. These are the ones who help by funding the work. The ones who know that most things require some level of funding. The transportation, the food, the supplies. These are the people that I contend we have sometimes looked down on as only writing a check and handing it over. And I admit it, I've often done the same thing. But these are the people we need in every movement. They're the people who want to help and have the resources to help financially. We need to see that they are also valued and needed and honor them for that. Because this is the group your Ravenclaws are calling for bail money. One of my other friends from seminary went on the witness event to the Mexico border last year. It was life-changing, and she was so grateful to go. And again, for me, this was something I considered and realized it was not my strong suit. But she's got a family and is in seminary, so money is very tight. But she funded her event through crowdsourcing. She had people in her life who wanted to help her do what she felt she had in her heart to do. And the way they could do that was by giving her the money to go. And in that way, they traveled with her. This is what our money people do. They go forth by providing the way. And let's remember, we love this house when it's time for capital campaigns and pledge drives. So let's remember that their contributions during Share the Plate is just as vital and important. And now the Gryffindors. They just want to do the right thing. They want to help. They want to save. They want to promote and provide justice. We need Gryffindors in our movement. In fact, I would contend that as a movement, we would be sorted into Gryffindor. Standing on the side of love, totally Gryffindor. They even use one of the colors, bright yellow. My friend in the Greenpeace blockade is a total Gryffindor. During that event, they tweeted that the police were starting to cut their support ties to the other protesters. My heart sank when they posted that. There was a real chance they could be injured. There was a very real chance they could be arrested. Finally, they agreed to come down from the bridge so they wouldn't be hurt. And thankfully, they were not arrested. I sat there thinking all day about how brave they were through that. But here's the thing. A couple weeks later, this friend posted something that shocked me. They talked about how absolutely scared they were up there, how they kept telling themselves that they could throw up once the camping setup was done, that they could close their eyes once they got settled and secured. Apparently, my friend is terrified of heights. And until that moment of their confession, I never knew. I thought they were fearless. I thought they had it all together, which is why imposter syndrome is so insidious. Don't compare your insides with someone else's outside. Even when you're in the house that's right for you, it's normal and natural to still struggle. That's what makes us human. It's this reason that our Gryffindors need the other houses. The Greenpeace effort didn't just have people hanging from the bridge. There were support teams above them on the bridge, below them in kayaks, and on the ground working the communication and keeping track of supplies. They also had people not even seen, monitoring the news, keeping social media efforts going, and staying in communication with the team. This is what working together looks like. Okay, so thinking about the people involved in our movement as being parts of four different houses is one thing. It's a great mental exercise, right? But what do we do with that? We must remember we are all part of a larger whole. It is each action, each style of ministering and witnessing that makes us into one large force for good. None of these houses can achieve great things on their own. Sure, they could survive, maybe even thrive, in their own little world. But together, joining hands and working together, each to their own strengths, filling in each other's weaknesses, they can and did achieve such wonderful things. So, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't read this, at the end of the series, all the houses fought together, side by side, to defeat the evil that was affecting their school. Even those who naturally didn't fight stood with the others and did what had to be done. What would it look like if we as a movement, as a denomination, as a people, quit looking at the Gryffindors among us as the paragons of social justice and witness? What would it look like if we all worked together? How much more effective could we be if we let the logistical people handle the logistics, the hospitality people handle taking care of everyone, the money people being honored for their support and necessary role? how much more energy would be made available for those on the front lines if they knew they didn't have to worry about the details and could just do what their hearts desired and help? I encourage you, first, to find what it is you're best at. Recognize that it is okay if we are not all out on the front lines fighting the good fight. Recognize that we all do have a part to play in the fight for social justice. Celebrate your strengths. If logistics are your thing, embrace it. If you are best at taking care of everyone, do it. And if writing the check is how you are able to participate, awesome. And if you're the one who thrives on being in the middle of the action, we salute you. Encourage those who are good at things other than being out in front. Let's stop making being the hero the be-all, end-all of the movement. It's about claiming your strength and your truth, and also about us all honoring each other's strengths, even when they aren't the same as we all have. There may be four houses, but they are all equally part of the same school. May we remember that we are all a part of Unitarian Universalism, regardless of which house we are in. Even the great headmaster Dumbledore said in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, "We are only as strong as we are united, as weak as we are divided." As we close, I leave you with the words of Robert F. Kaufman. "We have come together to share our deepest concerns, speaking and singing words of inspiration and hope. We have committed ourselves to do what we can to ease the burdens of those who suffer, to stand for decency and compassion. We have pledged to work for a more wholesome environment, for us and for all the generations that will follow. But these are just words. The hymns we sing are just songs. All our reflections are just idle thoughts. When we convert them into loving and responsible action throughout the week, then and only then will this morning become what we want it to be, a time of worship. May we use this time of worship to build on our strengths, support those who may be struggling with seeing their contributions, so we can face the world together as one unit to help others. So may it be. Amen and blessed be."